Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Naso. Please consider a financial contribution in honor of the podcast. Your contribution to the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies is tax deductible and is very, very much appreciated. Pardes is a small institution, so your gift goes a long way to helping us out and enabling us to continue to bring the podcast series to you. You can donate online at any time via donate.pardesusa.org. Thank you very much. This week, Naso with Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Naso. Today, I would like to examine chapter 6 in the parsha, the section that speaks of the Nazir, the Nazirite. Let us begin with an understanding of the basic laws of the Nazirite. In verse 2, we are told, Ish o isha ki afli lindor neder nazir. The laws of the Nazirite apply equally to men and women. How does one become a Nazirite? By taking a vow. A vow, Hareini Nazir, behold, I am a Nazirite. According to the rabbinic understanding, when one takes such a vow, Hareini Nazir, what's called Nazir Stam, a Nazirite without specifying for how long that will be, the person becomes a Nazirite for 30 days. What are the laws surrounding such an individual? In verse 3 and 4, we are told, the Nazirite is not allowed to drink wine. Not only wine, but he is not allowed to eat anything that is from the grape, from the peels to the seeds. Second law, verse 5. Ta'ar lo ya'avor al rosho. A razor shall not pass over his head. The Nazirite is not allowed to cut his hair. We are told at the end of the verse, Gadel pera sa'ar rosho. He needs to let his hair grow wild. On the basis of this phrase, the rabbis infer that the minimum time for one to be a Nazirite is 30 days, because it is only after 30 days that one could say that he has a pera, hair which is grown wild. The rabbis also make a drash on the word yihyeh, kadosh yihyeh, he shall be holy. The numerical value of yihyeh is 30. And this becomes a support to their understanding that the Nazirite that we are speaking about is one who will be a Nazirite for 30 days. The third law, which we are told of in verses 6 and 7, is that a Nazirite is not allowed to come in contact with a dead body, even if the dead are his parents, his siblings. He is not allowed to defile himself. The rabbis say that there is one exception to this rule, and that is a mate mitzvah. If the Nazir encounters a dead body on his journey, in a situation where it is clear that no one will bury that dead body, then he is required to do so. It is a mitzvah for him to do so, even though that will mean that he will be defiling himself and will have to once again count 30 days for his new Nizirut, Nazaritism. When we see these laws of the Nazirite, we immediately see a very interesting parallel between the Nazir and between the priest. We said that the first law is that the Nazir is not allowed to drink wine. We know from Leviticus chapter 10, verse 9, that Aaron is told, wine and aged wine, you and your son shall not drink when you enter the tent of meeting, so that you will not die. And in verse 10, in order to separate between the holy and the profane, between the impure and the pure. Priests are not allowed to drink wine before, during their service in the temple. The Nazirite is not allowed to drink wine, but even more than that, he is not allowed to partake of grapes, any part of the grape. So that at face value, there is a very interesting comparison between the Nazir and the priest. Let us take this one step further. The Nazir is not allowed to come in contact with a dead body. Priests are not allowed to come in contact with a dead body. But the Nazir is not allowed to even defile himself by touching his parents, his siblings. And once again, if we draw an analogy to the priesthood, if we look at Leviticus chapter 21, verse 11, which speaks of the high priest, it says that he is not allowed to come in contact with any dead body, even his father and mother. He is not allowed to defile himself. So that, in fact, not only is the Nazir comparable to a priest, he is actually comparable to a high priest. Let us take this one step further. The Nazir is called Nazir. The root of that is the word Nezer. Very interestingly, the word Nezer comes up twice in the context of the high priest. In that same section which I mentioned a moment ago, in Leviticus chapter 21, verse 12, the next verse, it says that the high priest shall not leave the temple and shall not defile the temple. And the reason that's given is because Nezer, from the same root as Nazir, Shemen Mishchat Elohav Alav, the anointing oil of God is upon him. The word Nezer is understood to be something which separates you. In this context, it is not just something which separates you out, but it is a crown. The anointing oil is the crown of the high priests, of the high priest, which declares that he is dedicated to God. And therefore, he should not defile himself by coming in contact with the dead. We have a very interesting verse, which also appears in the context of the clothing of the high priest. One of the articles of clothing is the headband, what is known as the tzitz. Engraved on the tzitz is the phrase, Kodesh Lashem, holy to God. You can see this in Shmot, Exodus, chapter 28, verse 36. But perhaps what is even more significant for us is Exodus, chapter 39, verse 30. The tzitz is referred to as tzitz nezer hakodesh. And at the end of the verse it says, and you shall inscribe upon it an inscription which says, holy to God. The high priest has two things which are his nezer, his crown. He has the headband, and he has also the anointing oil. And both of these proclaim him as being holy to God. In our section, we are told a number of times that the Nazir is also holy to God. In verse 8, it says, Kol Yemei Nizro, Once again, Numbers 6, verse 8. Kol Yemei Nizro, all the days of his being a Nazir, Kadoshu Lashem, he is holy to God. In the very opening verse, it says that if one takes the vow of becoming a Nazir, Lahazir Lashem, to crown himself to God, separate himself to God. And in verse 5, when it speaks about not cutting his hair, it says he shall not cut his hair all until the days are complete, that he has separated himself out, Yazir Lashem, Kadoshiyeh, he shall be holy. What is the point which I want to bring up with this? It is clear from the Torah that one who takes the vow of a Nazirite is aspiring to be holy, aspiring to be like a priest, perhaps even a high priest, and that the various laws which we have are our reflection of that status which he would like to attain. Not only are they a reflection, but perhaps they also signal a means. And what do I mean by that? By not drinking wine, as we see in Leviticus chapter 10, one is able to make the separation between holy and profane, between pure and impure. By not drinking wine, one is able to have a certain clarity of mind. Drinking wine tends to perhaps blur the ability of one to see things very clearly. We are all familiar with the idea that on Purim, one is supposed to drink wine, ad delo yada, until he doesn't know the difference between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai. So that abstaining from wine is supposed to enable us to think clearly. There is an interesting verse from the prophet Amos in chapter 2, where he says, "And I have established from your sons to be prophets, and from your young men to be Nizirim, Nazirites." There is a very interesting juxtaposition between the Nazir and the prophet. And the Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, from Volozhin, notes the fact that one becomes a Nazir and sanctifies himself in order to be able to receive divine inspiration. So that not only is the Nazir aspiring to be like a priest, a high priest, the high priest who goes into the Holy of Holies, who has the most intense I-thou encounter, but he is aspiring to be a prophet, to be filled with divine inspiration. There is one very interesting difference between the Nazir and the priest. And that is, the Nazir is supposed to let his hair grow long. The priest is actually not supposed to let his hair grow long. This is not something that we actually are told in the Torah. This is something which appears in the Talmud, in the Mishnah. And in fact, the high priest was actually supposed to have a haircut every day. And if we take this another step, it is very interesting that in next week's parsha, when the Levites, the Levi'im, are installed in their role to be the ones who serve in the temple, in the Mishkan, as part of their installation ceremony, we are told in chapter 8, verse 7, that they have to have a razor pass over all of their flesh, which in simple English means they have to shave off all the hairs on their body. And very interestingly, this is seen as being part of a purification process. On the one hand, they need to have the ashes of the red heifer sprinkled upon them, and on the other hand, they need to have all the hair on their body shaved off. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch has a very interesting explanation for this contrast between the Levi'im, and one could also add the priests, the Kohanim, and the Nazir. According to Rabbi Hirsch, the purpose of shaving off the hair is in many ways to strip the Levi'im of their individuality, of what makes them unique, separate. I remember hearing on a number of occasions from a Holocaust survivor how she described when she was brought in as a teenage girl to the shower rooms in Auschwitz, and how they stripped them naked and shaved off their hair. And she said, we looked like monkeys. Their appearance had changed so much that she said that even sisters found it hard to recognize each other. Hair is something which sets us apart, which somehow reflects our individuality. When the Leviim are given their role, their hair is shaved off in order to tell them, when you serve in the Mishkan, you leave your individuality at the door. You need to see yourself through and through as being someone who serves the community. If we then move to the Nazir is supposed to let his hair grow long, wild, which, given this logic, is accentuating his individuality. And therefore, we now have two models, the Kohen, the Levite on the one hand, and the Nazir on the other hand. Two models of how people encounter the divine, of how they experience holiness, transcendence. In the case of the Kohen, the experience of holiness is by being a public servant, by somehow transcending yourself, your individuality, and seeing yourself through and through as being the embodiment of the people. Everything that you are doing is for the sake of the people, to somehow bring them into a closer relationship with God. The Nazir is someone who separates himself from the people. One might even say, who puts himself on a higher plane than everyone around him. And here I would like to perhaps look at, why is this section of the Nazir in our Parsha? If we actually examine last week's Parsha and this week's, and perhaps even next week, we will see that the whole beginning of the book of Bamidbar is very much concerned with organizing, structuring the camp of the Jewish people. It is a structure which has at its core the tabernacle, the dwelling place of God. Every tribe is given their place vis-a-vis the tabernacle. Every individual is counted and made to feel that they have a particular place within their tribe. This process of structuring the nation is in order to be able to create a very real division of labor. Beyond the division of labor, it gives a message to each individual. You have a very particular role to play within that very large context. But structures can be stifling. And what happens if I have someone who says, I am a regular Jew, but I would like to have the experience of a priest? Why should the priest be enabled to have that higher level of holiness, to be able to have that encounter with the tabernacle, with the divine presence, which is denied to your average Jew? By creating the institution of the Nazir, the Torah is giving that leeway, that flexibility to individuals who feel that need, that urge, to not be boxed in, to not be stifled, to be able to somehow now break out of the structure. If they so desire, they can take upon themselves the vows of a Nazir and aspire to a higher level of spirituality. But it is important for that person to realize that in so doing, they are cutting themselves off from the rest of the community. They are now doing something which is, might be called self-absorbed. Yes, they have the ability to reach a much higher level of experience, but that is something which is very much personal. They are not doing this on behalf of anyone else other than themselves. We know that wine very often is a way in which people socialize. Not drinking wine removes you from the social context. Not burying the dead removes you also from a social context. You are not living in the reality of regular people. You are transcending that reality. The Torah evidently feels that it is important to give people that opportunity to be able to experience something which is much higher. But there is always the question, am I really justified in doing so? Perhaps there's a certain element of self-righteousness. And hence you have a very interesting difference of opinion in Talmudic sources. Some people see the Nazirite as being an ideal, as being the ultimate expression of holiness. And Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, in the Tractate of Nedarim, page 54, says that the Nazir brings a sin offering because he has distressed himself by abstaining from wine. And perhaps we can see this on a number of levels. On one level, one could understand this, that one is supposed to actually engage this world and to not necessarily see that the ultimate is an otherworldly existence. There's a statement in the Yerushalmi which says that a person will be held accountable when his days are over for not having enjoyed to the fullest all that God gave him. Which means that there is a value in partaking of the world. One might add to that, there is also something which is very, very important in being part of a community. And maybe there's a certain element of hubris in taking upon oneself something which separates them from the community as a way of saying, I am different than everybody else, and I need to show that by setting myself apart. In general, the rabbis had an aversion to people taking vows. On the one hand, there may be a certain element of self-righteousness. Many years ago, I remember hearing Nechama Leibowitz, and I've mentioned this on previous podcasts, who would say that she had a problem with vegetarians. What's the problem? The problem is that when one says, I am a vegetarian, which is saying, I have a heightened sensitivity which doesn't allow me to eat meat. Is that really true? Is that person really so sensitive to the way they relate to other people that they have somehow exhausted and completed, perfected the sensitivity which they show to human beings and therefore have to take it another level and show how sensitive they are to animals? And the issue which everyone needs to ask themselves is whether the vow which I'm taking, whether the statement which I am making is really a true expression of who I am. Am I somebody who is so holy, who is so ready to have that divine encounter that I need to now abstain from wine, to abstain from coming in contact with the dead? Do I need to let my hair grow long and show everybody? I am doing my own thing. I am different than you. I am, in fact, a cut above. I just would bring up another interpretation, which says that the problematic of the Nazir is not taking on the vow, but in stopping. If someone truly wants to live a higher spiritual life, and truly is at a level where they are different than everyone else, then why do this for 30 days? Why not become a Nazir forever? If one has really experienced that added dimension of holiness, how can one then stop? We know there is a rabbinic principle which says we always go up in holiness, but don't go down. And therefore, by stopping, perhaps that shows in retrospect that maybe this is something which should never have been to begin with. Since we are now in the aftermath of Chag HaShavuot, there's a very interesting analogy. The Jewish people, before the Torah was given at Sinai, insisted that they wanted God to appear to them and speak to them directly, and not to simply be spectators watching how God says the Ten Commandments to Moses. And so God said to Moses, if the people want to have that direct I-thou encounter, so let them prepare themselves. Let there be a separation between the men and the women. Let them purify themselves. And we find that on the day of the revelation, when God's glory comes down, even before God speaks, the people are trembling. They're devastated by the magnitude of that experience. And then we find after the Ten Commandments that the people say in no uncertain terms, you, Moshe, speak to us. We cannot deal with God who speaks to us. It is overwhelming. Perhaps then in retrospect we see that the people were aspiring for something which they didn't know really how to handle. To put it in simple English, they were biting off more than they could chew. And perhaps they didn't understand the full magnitude, the full responsibility of what they were asking for. Only Moses, who truly is on that higher spiritual level, can experience the revelation and then continue to go on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights without eating. And not only that, but can continue to speak to God face to face. And because of that, needs to separate himself from his wife. Because of that, when he comes down from the mountain, his face is beaming, reflecting the divine presence. So I would like to end by saying, the section of the Nazirite teaches us that even when it seems to be that we are locked into certain roles in the community, that the Torah actually gives us opportunities to find higher levels of spiritual expression. But the ways that we do it are parallel, but different than what's prescribed for others. The Nazir will come, in the best of situations, to the same religious experience as the high priest, but from a radically different place. It will not be in the temple. It will be outside the temple. It will not be serving the people, but it will be in his own spiritual search. The Torah does not want to stifle opportunities of religious expression. But when people seek to have higher levels of expression, they need to ask themselves, is it truly appropriate to who I am, to where I am? What's the trade-off? To what degree, by aspiring for something higher, I am cutting myself off from my family, from my community, from the world at large? There certainly may be situations where it is justified and where, in fact, it is praiseworthy. But there may also be situations, perhaps many situations, where there may be a certain element of hubris and self-righteousness. Before we try to aspire for higher levels of existence, perhaps we need to first maximize and internalize all the avenues which are presented to us, which we are obligated to do, and see if those cannot be the places where we find our fulfillment. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.